this case centers to a large degree on the action of the immigration judge who took the wife's testimony off the record, it would appear. The husband and wife came from Pakistan, both filed asylums, and during the course, the judge evidently took hearing of the wife's testimony and made some references to it. Unfortunately, the judge did not put a full summary into the proceedings of what he summary.
Counsel, the lawyer for the Attorney General has argued that the claims you make in this court were not presented to the agency. You're going to need to show us that you have properly exhausted your administrative remedies.
Well, this is a due process constitutional
issue. You have to exhaust your administrative remedies on every issue you seek to raise.
The counsel to the BIA did raise the issue that there was not a full and fair hearing. And the issue of the judge not following the required procedure in taking the wife's testimony off the record resulted in a violation of due process, and the BIA should have reversed and remanded it.
The question I'm asking is whether this argument was presented to the board. If an immigration judge makes a mistake, you're supposed to make the argument to the board so the mistake can be corrected. Was this argument made to the board?
The attorney doing the petition to the BIA did raise the argument that there was not a full and fair hearing.
Yes, and I don't think just using the word unfair excuses you from making concrete arguments. My question stands, was this argument presented to the board?
If it was not presented through the reference to not having a full and fair hearing, then the attorney omitted asking for it specifically, and by that action showed that he was an ineffective counsel. And the ineffective counsel should have been recognized by the BIA.
About ineffective assistance of counsel ever been presented to the board?
It was in our issues. I think it was obvious to the board that when no mention was made to the board about the taking the wife's testimony off the record and not handling it properly, they should have recognized this and remanded it back to the immigration judge.
So how do you deal with this Lozada case, which basically says you have to preserve that claim, you have to lay that out before the BIA?
The Lozada says you have to complain to the ARDC in our state, and that
wasn't done here.
That was not done, but the fact that there are due process claims make this an exception to the rule that the board has to that they have to follow the Lozada case. This court and the board and the BIA have jurisdiction when there's due process violations, and the due process violations were obvious from the record when it was shown at the wife's testimony, and the wife was the person who had received the phone calls from the ex-husband with all of the threatening language, and she was the one who would clearly describe the nature of the threat and the nature of possible persecution. By taking only the husband's testimony, it was secondary hearsay and didn't have the impact, and the judge just said it was not credible. And he didn't say anything about the credibility of the wife, who was the most important person to testify and was supposed to be the first one. And the judge changed the arrangement and took her off the record. And all of these irregularities were before the BIA, and they should have reversed, and I think
but
you
it
should
wasn't
reverse
really
here.
But see, it wasn't really pointed out specifically to the BIA. You know, one prong of Lozada is going to the ARDC. But then you're supposed to submit an affidavit explaining, you know, the representation, submit evidence so that...
there were affidavits submitted to the BIA.
But they didn't lay out this problem of the...
But I think they laid out the facts that showed that there was the problem and that there was a problem with the lack of due process and that this should have been recognized by the BIA, and they did not recognize it. They only put in a footnote that there was missing testimony by the wife and that they were going to disregard it. How can you say you did a full review when you're saying, we don't know what this other testimony was, but we're not going to worry about it?
Because it's the job of the litigant's attorney to raise the issue before the board.
The attorney raised the due process issue when he said there was not a full and fair hearing.
But why didn't he state it's the wife's testimony, which was not recorded, which is the, I mean, you know, could have been anything.
That's right. Who knows what it was?
That's exactly the problem. If you file before the board a brief saying due process unfair, the board's reaction is, what is this person talking about? What are the concrete particulars? As you're arguing this case, a lawyer could file in any immigration case a three-word brief. Due process, period. Unfair, period. And then the board would have to scour the record and make whatever arguments the lawyer could have made had he filed a real brief. And that doesn't seem an appropriate understanding of the exhaustion requirement.
To make things clear and to have them brought up specifically makes for better order and case law. But when facts and things are presented, I believe the BIA has a duty to recognize them and to take the facts that everything was not, that the immigration judge did not follow procedures in summarizing what was in there, should have been taken by judicial notice of the BIA. And if you hold that these were not brought up, then it brings up the issue of ineffective counsel that should have been recognized by the BIA when they saw that the issue was there, but it wasn't brought up.
But he hasn't complied with the administrative requirements for making a claim of ineffective assistance.
Pardon?
Mr. Kafar has not complied with the administrative requirements for making a claim of ineffective assistance. So how can he show error on the board's decision not to address the merits of his, you know, claim or to remand for further proceedings?
Counsel for the government recognized that it should have been sent back to the judge for rehearing and proper handling. And he argues that extensively in his rebuttal brief and says that the board could have remedied by ordering a new hearing and the wife's testimony. And when you,
what he's saying is, if the lawyering had been proper in this case, and I understand you were not the lawyer down there, he had other lawyers, that something might have been done, but you know, a day too late, a dollar too short.
Well, the attorney that did the BIA work did not raise the Lozada procedure in connection with the case, and I can't tell you why.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Sanders. Mr. Dupre. Do not touch the microphone.
May it please the Court. Tom Dupre on behalf of the United States. All of the petitioner's arguments are either unexhausted or meritless or both. To begin with
Do
regard...
Do you have any idea of why the testimony of the wife was not taken on the record?
The record is not clear at all on that point, Judge Rovner. The relevant portion is page 173 of the administrative record, and all that page reveals is that at the conclusion of the petitioner's testimony, the immigration judge says, we will go off the record to let you bring in the petitioner's wife, who is going to be the next witness. At that point, the transcript ends. It then recommences with the closing arguments of counsel. That's all it says. Certainly the petitioner, neither the petitioner nor the petitioner's lawyer, has offered any explanation for why it was taken off the record, and it's entirely possible the immigration judge may simply have neglected to record that portion, or it's possible that it simply was not transcribed.
Well, how does the board typically handle issues about a witness whose testimony hasn't been recorded? I mean, would it automatically order a new or supplemental hearing to get that testimony on record, or would some showing of prejudice have to be made? What happens in a case like this?
Well, certainly there's no per se requirement, as this case illustrates, that if the board discovers that a portion of the testimony has not been recorded or transcribed, it does not remand in every case. I think the first inquiry is, has the petitioner complained about it or challenged the fact that it's not included in the record? Certainly, this court could envision a scenario where, for some technical reason, a 2-minute exchange was not captured over the course of a 3-day hearing. Certainly, in that case,
an 18-and-a-half-minute gap.
Right.
To choose an amount of time. Certainly, there could be a period of time that wasn't recorded. So I think a per se rule of remand would make little sense as a practical matter. And particularly whereas here, the petitioner has never complained about it. He never brought it to the attention of the agency. Even before this court, he doesn't explain why he was prejudiced.
Does the record contain the original audio tapes? That is, do we know whether this is a problem in the taping, or is it a problem in the transcription, or was it really a decision by the immigration judge not to have something either recorded or transcribed?
We don't know, Judge Easterbrook. As far as the administrative record goes, the physical audio tapes are not included. It's my understanding that the board's standard practice, again, I'm speaking outside the confines of the record, but the standard practice would be if the board discovers on its own, as it did in this case, that there was a portion of the testimony missing, it would typically make an inquiry. In other words, it would call either the immigration judge or the transcription service to try to get to the bottom of it. And all we know from this case is that the board noticed it, and it simply concluded that the immigration judge had apparently gone off the record.
Well, then shouldn't we remand? I mean, for the sake of justice here?
I don't think so, Judge Rovner, for two reasons. The first reason is the exhaustion point. The petitioner's counsel and the petitioner were clearly on notice that this was not in the record for one of two reasons. Either the testimony was taken off the record with the consent of all parties, which is possible. Again, we're speculating, but it's possible. The second possibility is if, in fact, there were simply a lapse in the tape recording mechanism, the petitioner's counsel knew this because he was given a copy of the transcript at the time he was preparing his brief to the agency on appeal. And he had the immigration judge's decision, which, even if the petitioner had somehow forgotten that his wife testified, but assuming that he had forgotten that fact, the immigration judge's decision recounts at length the petitioner's wife's testimony. So the petitioner and his lawyer had the IJ decision that discussed the wife's testimony and the record, the transcript, which made no mention of the wife's testimony, and yet he never objected, he never challenged that. So that's one reason, is failure to exhaust. Second reason is there's no prejudice. Even before this court, the petitioner's brief does not articulate why this omission was prejudicial. And indeed, it's hard to understand how it could possibly be prejudicial in that the immigration judge simply noted that the wife did nothing more than corroborate his testimony.
It's easy to understand how it could be prejudicial. It's just that it's not established in this record. The immigration judge's summary of the wife's testimony might be incorrect, and a transcript might show that it was incorrect. But there's nothing in this record that would lead you to conclude that that was so.
And that's what I meant by saying it's hard to understand.
That's an exhaustion requirement, one would think.
That's right. That's why I said it was hard to understand, given that the petitioner himself, to this day, has not explained how he was harmed by this. He had never raised this at any stage in the proceedings before now, complaining that this was a problem. So that's why I'm saying it's hard to understand how he was harmed by this omission. And the petitioner suggested at the close of his argument that the government had somehow acknowledged the need for remand. Of course, that's not the case. I think the portion of our brief to which he's referring is where we said, had the petitioner raised this at the agency level, it could have either been cured or at least further investigated to get to the bottom of it. But of course, the petitioner, knowing or at least had constructive knowledge of this omission, never raised it at any stage of the agency procedure, and hence he has failed to exhaust it. With regard to the petitioner's ineffective assistance of counsel claim, first of all of those arguments are similarly unexhausted, but for the argument that what his lawyer failed to attach a death certificate to his brief, and the argument that he was not able to communicate with his lawyer because they didn't speak the same language. Those are the only two ineffective assistance arguments he raised at the agency level. All others are not exhausted. Moreover, as I think Judge Williams correctly noted, the petitioner failed to comply with the Lozada requirements, which, of course, are administrative requirements. This court in Stroh and other cases has emphasized the need for petitioners to comply. Here, there is no dispute that the petitioner failed to comply with those requirements, and his claim fails for that reason alone. Finally, he also has failed to establish any resulting prejudice from the alleged ineffective assistance of counsel. The final issue raised in petitioner's brief, I think, is utterly meritless. This is the argument that the IJ was biased against him based on a statement in the IJ's oral decision. Here, too, the petitioner never raised this claim at the agency level, hence he has failed to exhaust it. Second point is, even if this court were inclined to forgive this clear waiver, it's evident that the IJ was in no sense biased. In fact, he was simply recounting the testimony that he had heard and not in any sense rendering a value judgment on his own. I think this case simply reflects no bias on part of the immigration judge, and its claim fails for that reason. Unless there are any further questions from the panel, we respectfully request that the petition for review be denied.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.